On Christmas Day in 2004, is that right? 2004, Christmas Day, a young woman named Duleep was walking into the town of Banda Aceh in Sumatra. And she was coming into the town, into the center of the town, because she needed to have her documents signed by the Minister of Education in order to get her certificate. So she left her family in a more village area, rural area, came into Banda Aceh, and spent the night with her friend and her friend's family, so that first thing in the morning she could go and visit the Minister of Education. She was about 19 years old. Well, on the next day, December 26, as they were eating breakfast, there was a huge earthquake, and it rattled the house, it rattled them, the dishes rattled. If you've ever been in an earthquake, it's very noisy. And you're hearing noises from places you don't expect to hear noises, like under your feet. And Duleep and her friend and the family were terrified. And they went outdoors, and the way that it happens after a disaster, all the neighbors are talking and saying, what happened in your house and what happened in your house? And they see the damage that was done to some houses but not to others. And as they were standing out there talking, there suddenly was a silence, and then more noise, and people running and shouting and screaming. The ocean, for some reason, was coming in a huge wave up into the village area where they were staying, where the houses were. It came in a big roiling curve full of sort of a hot sulfurous material, and it came roaring in, and Duleep and her friend grabbed hold of each other. And they said, don't let go, don't let go. They grabbed hold of each other, and the water hit them, hit the family, hit the house, hit the neighbors, hit the cars, hit the trees, hit the everything. And Duleep and her friend were not able to hold on. They just did not have the strength to do it. And Duleep remembers being turned upside down, round and around. And when she finally came to a stop, she was inside somebody's house on the second floor. And she's sitting there thinking, what just happened? Where am I? Am I okay? Where's my friend? What is this stinky hot stuff that has just landed on me? And as she was thinking that, the second wave came. And it came into that room just like the first one had done to deposit her. The water came in and floated her out again. And again, she was upside down and twirled around, and she didn't know up from down or sideways. But somehow, and she doesn't know how, we might know how, somehow, she ended up on a rooftop, a pitched rooftop. Again, bedraggled, confused, dizzy. She's sitting up there, looking around, and what does she see? Destruction all around. She sees bodies. She sees cars flipped over. She sees the vegetation gone. She sees water up high. She's sitting on a roof. She doesn't know whose house, and she doesn't know who else is alive. I'm going to leave Duleep there for a minute. And we'll come back and tell you more about her story. I'm going to leave her up there, sitting on the roof, wondering what has happened. I'm here today, well, because I was asked, But I'm here today to talk with you about a ministry and mission that you are involved in, and that you may or may not know. This is a wonderful congregation for mission work. I've looked through your booklet to see all the different things that you have, local things, international things. This is a church that knows what mission is. Even the little children knew. Mission is going someplace and doing something. It means reaching out. It means sharing God's love. But the mission that I want to talk about this morning is the mission that you do in conjunction with all of the other United Methodists in the world. This is the mission that you're able to do through your relief and development agency, the United Methodist Committee on Relief. UMCOR is available 24/7 to respond to the needs of the world, the hurts of the world, to bind the broken hearts, and to be your hands and feet in the places where you cannot be. With the local mission that is possible here, we know that your witness, your value, your model to the community of what it means to be a disciple, to be faithful, to be in service to others, that's alive and well here. The wider ministry that you're involved in happens because we are a connectional denomination. We share something in common with every other United Methodist. Whether you know it or not, you are at work today in 10 field offices around the world. You're at work today in the Sudan. What are you doing in the Sudan today? Well, today you're working with a refugee camp, and you're helping those refugees who had to leave everything behind. You're helping them to get started again. They're farmers. And what you're doing today is you're teaching them how to make their tools at the blacksmith. You brought in the equipment. You're teaching them how to make their own tools. And you're showing them how to grow their crop in a smaller space than they're used to, in a different kind of soil, a different kind of climate. And you're giving them the seeds to get started. And you've made an agreement with them that when they harvest, 1/4 of what they harvest is for them and their family to eat. 1/4 is for them to sell or trade so that they can get the other things they need. 1/4 is to save, to plant for the next season so that there's something for the next year. And 1/4 is to give back to you so that you can have a seed bank for those who inevitably will be coming behind them. That's what you're doing this morning. You thought you were in church. What else are you doing this morning? Where else in the world might you be? You know, there's a group in the Congo. Congo is a fascinating place to think about what you're doing because it's a huge country. It's the size, it's the size of the United States from Mississippi to the coast. I mean, it's a huge piece of land, and there's very, very little infrastructure. There's no highway, electricity doesn't go everywhere, there isn't a phone system. I mean, it's a very difficult place to be. And in one of these areas, there has been ongoing fighting for years and years, rebel groups fighting each other. They're just sort of local warlords. And they have a saying in Africa that when the elephants fight, the grass is destroyed, grass is trampled, and the ants, everything on the bottom. Well, when the warlords fight, the people are stepped on. And our bishop, United Methodist Bishop, Bishop Ntombo, got tired of it. His people were hungry. They were being shoved this way and then shoved that way. They weren't able to sustain themselves. And he worked and he worked and he worked until he had gotten the trust of all the sides that were warring. You know how hard that is? All the warring sides. To talk with one person and not alienate the other. To be able to move freely among the people. He brought the warlords together. And the only place they would meet was in his compound. Because they were afraid of each other. They're fierce. Fierce and armed. But they came to the compound because they trusted him. It took a week. They talked for a week. They worked for a week. And at the end of the week, the warlords had come to an agreement. They had come to a truce. And they agreed to put down their arms. They closed that event by laying their arms at the altar. And that altar became the altar of peace. That was your bishop that made that happen. But you know who paid and made possible all those warlords coming together? They wouldn't have come if they didn't have transportation costs. They wouldn't have come if they weren't sure that they would be fed when they got there. There's no McDonald's, believe me, in Kamina. There's no place to sleep, so something had to be arranged for that. Who did that? Who planned the party for the peace talks? You did. You did. Bishop Ntombo had the vision, had the power of Christ in him, but you physically made it possible. Bishop Ntombo, one more story about agriculture. He's a bishop who has said to his pastors, I don't want you as a pastor unless you know how to farm. We'd be in trouble. No place for us there. He said that because hunger is the main issue, main problem, main concern of his people. And if you don't know how to farm and you don't know how to teach your people to farm, then you don't need to be a pastor because you can't lead them where they need to go. You have made possible a training program there so that both pastors and leaders, farmers in the community, have been trained in, now I'm going to forget the word, the kind of low-tech farming that doesn't use chemicals, doesn't use chemical fertilizers or pesticides, very organic, because organic is much more sustainable. And they're able to begin to get their crops going in remote areas where the bishop hasn't been for 3 years because he can't get there. In far away, people have been able to begin to renew their skills and their crops. But the bishop overheard one woman talking to another saying that her children were hungry. And he asked her, why are your children hungry? And she said, well, for two seasons of the year, they have three seasons. For two seasons of the year, there's enough food. But by the third season, they don't have anything left. And the harvest doesn't come in. So they asked the bishop, is there anything you can do? And what he did was he called on somebody that you support. He called on an UMCOR staff person, a man named Mozart, who lives in Ghana. And he said, is there anything we can do for these mothers and for these children? And you said, yes, there is. And you went from Ghana to the Democratic Republic of Congo, met with the women, and taught them how to grow a new vegetable. Now, we would probably call this vegetable, we would call it cabbage, just plain cabbage. It's an Asian kind of cabbage, like bok choy. He taught them how to grow the cabbage, which would grow in and be harvested and available in this season where they were missing the food. And the mothers planted, they followed his instructions. They began to have a crop that lasted through that season. And I wondered, and I don't really know, how they fix it. You know, do they make sauerkraut? Do they make soup? Do they make coleslaw? I'm not sure how they eat it. But that cabbage gets them through the hungry time. Bishop Ntambo came to us, and I'm coming to you to tell you what those mothers named that vegetable. They named it Thank You Methodists. I love to think about a mom calling out the door for the kids to come in for dinner, and the kids say, what are we having? You know, kids all around the world say that. And she's saying, we're having the Thank You Methodists for dinner tonight. It's a lovely image. It's a lovely image. You made that possible. You made that possible through your participation as a United Methodist in this great mission work that we can only do because there's 8.5 million of us. It's the kind of thing that you can't do for a long time by yourself. It's just too big. The impact and the need is too great. But when we work together as the United Methodist Church, giving our resources to a relief and development agency, which is ours, which is UMCOR, we are able to do so much more than we even know. I'm sure you are aware of the work that's going on in the Gulf for Hurricane Katrina. The numbers of volunteers who have gone to help build will be needed for 3 to 4 years. So make your plans ahead. You don't all have to be there next month. It will be a long, long time. UMCOR will be there. You will be there. You will be there every day with UMCOR and through UMCOR. And I'm sure that you will also be there as volunteers in mission, lending your hand. I know some of you have already been down in that area, and you know just how devastating the hurricane was and continues to affect lives that are now spread out over the country. The work that is needed there is a work that will take patience and perseverance. And that's the work that you do. You're not there just when it's on the news. You're not there just when the first excitement happens and everybody's talking about it. That's not the only time that you are there. You will be there in 2 years, doing the paperwork, advocating for those who have fallen through the cracks, working to get another house built. You will be there. I know. In fact, I received this morning a bracelet. It's a Mission Central bracelet. And I know how important that is in your mission work here and how much good comes out of it. Mission Central is a wonderful partner with UMCOR in providing kits that are made in this conference and in this area. And We are now in the place in Louisiana where we are able to send 2 containers a month overseas. One container, one 40-foot container, is worth about $500,000. It's packed with soap and health items. It's packed with school kits, layette kits, sewing kits, sometimes with raw material. Somebody donated soap, and we said, sure, we can use some soap, and we got like 40 pallets of bars of soap. So we got soap. We send that. We put some of that into everything that goes out. And the blessing that a bar of soap is to somebody who doesn't have it. Someone whose last bar of soap was a month ago, and they don't have the money for another one. Can you imagine what that would feel like to be given a bar of soap? This is the kind of ministry that you're engaged in every day. People are being served in far-off places. Azerbaijan. Did you wake up this morning thinking about Azerbaijan? Well, you're there. You're doing a marvelous work of providing pharmaceuticals in a country that has no medical system. And what pharmaceuticals are there are managed and owned by a mafia kind of organized crime so that people don't have access to them. We manage a pharmaceutical distribution and healthcare system for refugees into Azerbaijan and for the poor of Azerbaijan that they could not get any other way. You're doing that. You didn't think about Azerbaijan this morning, but you're hard at work there. What about Dalit? She's sitting on the roof, and she's looking around, and she sees no one. She doesn't know where her family is. She thinks they're probably dead. She doesn't know where her friend is and is afraid she's probably dead. And she's sitting on the roof looking at utter chaos, unbelievable chaos. And she's not sure whether she's alive or dead. She sat there for 8 hours that whole day, until someone was able to reach her with a ladder and to get her down from the roof. What do you think she thought about while she was there for 8 hours by herself, 19 years old? What would you think about? What Dalit did when she came down that ladder? She found her family. They were okay, although they thought she was dead. Her mother was putting her things away in a box when she got home because she was sure that her daughter was dead. Dalit went home and connected with her family. She found her friend who also survived and the friend's family, although the house was destroyed. And what she did, I mean, she had every right to just lick her wounds. You know what I mean? To just say, okay, I've been through a lot and that's it, folks. Just leave me alone for a while. But what she did was she immediately engaged with the Methodist Church. The Methodist Church in Banda Aceh. And she began to work with children. Day by day, in camps where they were put together as a kind of a rescue, she would go and she would sing, teach them folk songs, talk to them about what had happened, listen to their stories, help them put their stories into drama. Very popular in Asia to teach through skits and through drama, because not all the groups have the same language even. So sometimes to communicate cross-culturally, you have to have a drama to make it happen. She has been working with children and then with women since then. She has been working with them to accompany them in their experience. She knows what it's like. She had a choice. She could have said, you know, that's their problem. I'm going to get my certificate in business and go to work. But what she is doing is she is working every day. And you are making it possible. She is working every day with children and women. Displaced, half-orphaned, widowed, poor, vulnerable women and children. And she is helping you to be the hands and mouth and feet of Christ with those people. There are so many places where you are, so many things that you are doing. I'm here today to say thank you for all that you have done, and to thank you for all that I know you will continue to do as United Methodists. The work that you have taught me what you're doing, I hope that I have taught you some of what you are doing. There's so much more. I hope that there's enough whetting your appetite to see where else are you in ministry. Keep learning. Pray for those affected by disasters. Pray for the healing of the world. Amen.